This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Sharad Abdullah and Wong Shaoning. It is 7.05 in the morning, Thursday the 8th of August, and US markets saw a volatile day yesterday. Investors started the day rushing to safety, causing US government bonds to rally and US stock indices to also fall sharply. The Dow and the S&P 500 both fell around 2%. However, US equities clawed back losses as investors turned more positive later in the afternoon amid central bank moves to ease monetary policy.
So if we look at the US market, the Dow Jones ended the day down by 0.1%, S&P closed up 0.1%, and the Nasdaq was up 0.4%. So this means that the Asian markets might be up for a mixed start today.
Yeah, whether it's a dead cat bounce, as traders would like to say. But meanwhile, yesterday in Asia, the Nikkei 225 closed down 0.3%. The Shanghai Composite was also down 0.3%. The Hang Seng Index actually closed up 0.1%. South Korea Kospi down 0.4%. Singapore Straits Times was down 0.5%. While the FBM KLCI was down 0.4%, dragged very much by the performance of Genting Malaysia.
I do like that term, you know, dead cat bounced. It's so lovely and illustrative. In the meantime, though, to give us some insight into global markets, we have on the line with us Tony Nash, Chief Economist and CEO at Complete Intelligence. Thank you for joining us, Tony. Now, this week, central banks in New Zealand, India and Thailand have all cut interest rates in a bid to shore up their defences against any potential headwinds in the economy. So were you surprised by the depth of some of the rate cuts?
No, not really surprised, especially given the events on Monday morning in Asia. I think what's happening is the region is waking up to the depths of the pullback in China and how difficult. I think people have known how difficult the Chinese economy has been for probably 4 to 6 months. But I think with the currency pullback, it really kind of shook people and helped them realize how bad things have gotten.
And do you know what policy options are left in central banks' toolkits for this region moving forward?
Oh, they can do, you know, they can do anything. They can do repo rates. They can buy ETFs. The Japanese central bank buys ETFs and puts them on their balance sheet. I mean, they can be very creative. So, you know, I don't think that that we're, you know, by any stretch of the imagination to the end of policy options. You know, if you look at places like India, you know, Indian growth has slowed, but it's by no means, you know, worrisome. It's just slowed marginally. So there was some talk in India of like a 50 basis point cut, and that would have been a bit of overreaction. I think they were right to do something between 25 and 50. New Zealand is a different story. Given the magnitude of the slowdown in the Chinese market, New Zealand is a different story because they export about $2 to $2.5 billion of milk products, milk, cheese, cream, butter, all that stuff, to China on an annual basis. So it's a notable part of their economy, and you know they have to be competitive there and be with other regional providers and domestic providers. So with New Zealand, it's not really that surprising given how small that economy is and how volatile a pullback in some of the key industries could be.
And Tony, currency traders are watching how the PBOC sets its reference rate for the yuan closely after it allowed the renminbi to fall below 7 this week. So do you see currency as the new weapon in the U.S.-China trade war?
You know, not really. I think 7 is a meaningful number in as much as falling below 7, what it told me is that policymakers in China are doing things that they don't want to do. Because from the Chinese government's perspective, currency helps them to be seen as economic leaders in the world. And as their currency has strengthened, it's been a path to political and economic leadership globally. If they have to kind of pull back on their currency and devalue, it really, in their minds, and I think in the minds of markets, it does create a sense of instability. And with that is a potential lack of credibility. So crossing 7 was a sign that Chinese economic leaders see real problems ahead and needed to signal to markets that they're in the middle of big problems.
And Tony, so over in the US as well, the Treasury Secretary seems to be more willing to use policy measures in order to weaken the US dollar. And by this, I'm talking about declaring China a currency manipulator. However, with all of this increasing uncertainty, won't investors hang on to the greenbacks since it's as it's considered a safe haven currency?
Yeah, we think so. And we, you know, we've looked for dollar appreciation through most of this year. Obviously, with the slowdown at the end of Q2, which we saw, but we do expect continued gradual appreciation in the dollar through probably November or so, and then we see a little bit of a pullback in the dollar. But you know, we don't expect dramatic dollar appreciation, but we do see gradual appreciation based upon the currencies are always a relative game. Eurozone's ugly, you know, Japan's ugly, China's ugly. So the dollar will continue to get attention and appreciate based on that relative gain.
Thank you so much, Tony. And that was Tony Nash, Chief Economist and CEO of Complete Intelligence, expecting a gradual appreciation of the dollar, as well as weighing in on the PBOC and the latest moves out of three central banks in New Zealand, India and Thailand. Because Thailand actually surprised investors by cutting rates for the first time this year from 1.75 to 1.5%, and the New Zealand rate cut was also a surprise. So street expectations were for a cut of about 25 bips, but the cut was more aggressive from 1.5 to 1%.
Yeah, so those two countries are not the only one. India also joined the gang, cutting its lowest level in 9 years from 5.75 to 5.4%. So, I mean, this is in line with the trend that is happening around central banks in Malaysia, Indonesia, South Korea, and South Africa. They too have reduced their policy rates in the recent months.
ECB is also expected to cut rates in September. The question I have for central bankers is that in this race to the bottom, which feels very much like one that they all want to get to the finish line, it's a little bit self-defeating, right, when you think about it, because rates are all about relative. So if everybody cuts rates at the same time, won't we be at exactly where we were?
Okay.
Yeah, so what is the point after a while?
We'll be exactly where we were, but with less dry powder, essentially.
Exactly,
right?
Which makes it scary. So for like New Zealand, you're actually down to 1%. So assuming your economy continues to slow down. And the funny thing about New Zealand is that it's almost full employment. The data points are actually super positive.
Yeah.
But yet central banks are cutting rates like that. I don't know whether central banks now are beginning to be the defender of equity markets. Because their role before 2008 was pretty much defined, right? They were there to make sure that the monetary policy was for the good of the economy in the long term. Mm. Then when markets crashed in 2008, central bankers started taking a look at equity markets or even fixed income markets. And although they never say so, it does seem like their responses are very much geared towards where markets are going.
So I hear number one is that what you're saying is that if everybody were to do this, it's relative. So what changes does it make, right? But at the same time, if you don't do it, then for an example, your currency might be stronger in some ways. And so like for a country like New Zealand, being export driven, especially with all their, you know, livestock and, you know, since their number of sheep, outnumbers the number of people there. So I see why they're concerned. But isn't it more of a result of just following, it's better to just follow the crowd at this stage.
Herd mentality.
Herd mentality.
With the rest of the sheep.
But the concern is that whether or not they'll run out of tools once the actual recession were to come in. Is that
yeah,
what we're going
for? Yeah, that's partially true. And if the New Zealand currency devalues, and let's say the US dollar devalues or the ringgit devalues, aren't we back where we were?
All the way back to
square one.
Which
is what I think
people
want, is just that status quo again.
Aside from that, though, in some other international headlines this morning, Lyft, the ride-hailing platform second only to Uber, they've reported earnings for the second quarter, and the company posted revenues of $867 million, beating expectations of $809 million as per Refinitiv. And Lynn.
Yes, are you starting your own detailing company?
Very soon.
I definitely didn't report earnings of any kind. Lyft also reported a user base with a 21.8 8 million active riders last quarter. That's higher than the 21.1 million also expected.
Yeah, so according to their CEO, Brian Roberts, he told CNBC that he believes that the company losses peaked last year. And he also added that the company may break even sooner than predicted, which is something to look forward to, I guess.
Good news for Xiaoning. Because you like your companies to make money, right?
I mean, what does he want? Medal for like losing more, less money? I mean, isn't the medal for you to make more money? But in this world of unicorns, hey, go figure.
It's interesting that that's the ambition right now, just to break even.
Yeah. Don't lose so much money. Don't burn so much money is the new mantra.
Yeah.
I mean, Uber's results are actually coming out on Thursday. And I'm also curious how much less losses did they make as opposed to how much money did they make? It's a very weird world out there.
And not forgetting that both Uber and Lyft are also going to be diversifying. They are looking to diversify their business beyond ride hailing into bike sharing as well as electric scooters.
I won't bank in on that so quickly. I mean, now there's a rising, discontent with all this, electric scooters, especially how they are on the walkway. So a lot of regulations are going to come into play. You never know. It's not as simple as it sounds, I think. It's not the end of the story, I think.
But for these guys, I do notice that they diversify into, like, for example, like Grab is very much about the food.
Right.
And even in Uber, the food business has actually been doing better than the ride-hailing business.
Yeah, surprising.
It's actually more lucrative on a margin perspective.
I don't know how they do it, though. I mean, with ₱5 per trip, I mean, I'm still trying to do the math, but it just doesn't add up. But
for Malaysia, right, you get a rebate. But I think for these companies globally, they are looking at diversifying their earnings space.
Yes, and not forgetting that Grab, have you noticed that Grab has introduced subscription packages and things like that? So it's quite a variety of options out there in order to get your money out of your wallet.
Out of all the many subscriptions that we take, Netflix and so forth.
Crazy. All right, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.